Tom Kohler is with me via phone. Tom is often on the other end of the radio, a longtime volunteer, and we've already heard him this morning, in fact, interviewing Kitty Mayo. But now we get to pick Tom's brain a little bit about a subject that I think he holds incredibly dear to his heart, among many topics that are dear to his heart, the Edna G. The Edna G has had a long history in Two Harbors, and there are, you know, a solid group of people that really are paying attention and caring about the Edna G. Pretty much, Tom, I don't think anyone can top your interest or investment in this. So thank you so much for being here to talk with us about the Edna G.
Oh, sure, you bet. I will not say that I have more interest than others, but I guess I'm more visible than others who have interest in the tug.
Yes, you're the voice of it. You know,
I'm former Navy, and the work that I did in the Navy was on steam propulsion plants on the submarines. Submarines in the U.S. are basically just very large steamboats. And so that was part of my interest in the tug is, well, it's a boat and it's got a steam engine in it. And so that was my first attraction, like my first kiss.
Now tell us a little
bit
about...
And I've been infatuated with her since.
That's right. And what we want to hear about today is sort of there is somewhat of an update on what we know about the Edna G., a historic tug that has sat in our harbor for decades. Tell us about this recent development.
Last November, a group of knowledgeable experts in the art of things related to the Edna G spent 2 days going over the tug with a fine-tooth comb and a very good camera. And we learned things about the tug we did not know before and have taken well over 1,000 photographs of the tug, plus some underwater video footage, seeing some things never seen before. And it was very educational. And what the conclusion was that the best thing for the tug, considering especially that it's an icon of the city and a very historic vessel in its own right, is that it needs to come out of the water and go on dry land.
Which is not a new idea, I might add.
It's not a new idea, but the thing is, there are a large number of well-read people who are of the opinion that, well, it's a boat. Boats belong in the water.
Right.
And while this is true, it is equally true that a boat is a hole in the water that you pour money into.
Right.
And if the boat is working and earning its keep, you can do that. You know, take it to the shipyard every 5 years for inspections and corrections and updates and more certifications and continual money spent on painting and scraping and scraping and painting and fixing and replacing. And the city of Two Harbors absolutely does not have the resources for that. And in any case, it's 126 years old, and it deserves a good, safe, secure retirement. Even in the short period of time that I've been looking after the tug, we've had a couple of pretty severe storms that have caused some damage to her, and the weather was bad enough that it even damaged two new 2-inch nylon mooring lines.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is not just some placid little tugboat that could bobbing quietly by the dock. It's one that is standing up to the forces of Lake Superior, who is very patient and knows that she can accomplish what she set out to do, which is to sink every boat that sails on her. Whether it's actually sailing or just quietly tied up.
Right. Maybe akin to a 95-year-old, lovely, elderly, senior woman on increasingly fragile legs who would love to sit down.
I think that's probably not too far off the mark.
Yeah.
And the tugboat has already sunk once when it was first launched. So she's on borrowed time, you might say.
Yes. And now the city currently owns the tug. Tell us the recommendations of what to do next.
Well, the recommendation is that the city retain ownership of the tug for a bunch of reasons that would tie up the radio slot. But a person needs to be hired who will supervise the process from beginning to end. Someone who knows how to shake the money tree. This has to be paid for by funds that do not come out of a local taxpayer's pockets. And such money is available.
Yeah.
But we need a pro who knows how to make that happen. A contract has to be let for engineering to study how to get the tug out of the water and onto the land. Designing the suitable support for the tug, including stabilizing the soil. You know, it's red plastic clay at that particular area along the shore. And that's one of the reasons the ore docks were built where they were, is the bottom was easy to work with in the late Victorian era.
Hmm.
And so it's something where when you put the tug on land, it doesn't just slowly settle as the clay flows away.
Mm.
The Mallee locomotive is doing that right now. It's sitting probably eight or 10 inches lower than it was when it was first placed where it is now.
Mm.
So I digress, but that's a concern. So you also have to get clearance from the Minnesota Historical Society. It's a state organization, which has the franchise from the federal government for maintaining compliance for National Historic Register standards and qualifications. A tug can be taken out of the water if it's necessary to preserve the original fabric of the hull. That's the language right out of the law. Pardon me. So, a side note, that is the condition of the hull of the tug. Is the tug's biography. There's a story in every crease and dent. And so one suggestion was, well, let's take it to the shipyard and just get the hull replated. Well, if you do that, you no longer have the original fabric of the hull, and that would automatically take it off the historic register, even if it were left in the water. You want to preserve the original fabric of the hull. That's part of the law. And so on land is the very best way to do that.
Hmm.
Maintenance is still going to need to be done. But if it's out of the water, that means that anybody can do it. We don't have to spend $50,000 just for the bus ticket to the shipyard, you know?
Right.
And so then there's also no danger of people falling off the tug into the lake while they're doing the maintenance on the tug. And so it's just infinitely easier to do the maintenance that is going to have to be done. And since it's not in the water, that will be one less assault on her.
And is it fair to assume, Tom, that the vision in the long term is that this tug does become a historic piece that people can examine from within and from without and within? Is that part
of it? Sure.
Okay.
People could do that now if they want to, you know.
Right.
I'll give anybody a tour anytime almost. And the Friends of the Edna G has the means to see to it that tours are available on a predictable basis as well. But it would be much easier to do if the tug is not in the water. It's safer for the tug, and it's safer for the people that are visiting her. They don't have to worry about everybody falling over the side, you know.
Right.
We've got a hook. We can fish them out of the water. But it's easier to say than it is to do. You know, when you hit that cold water, all the rules go out the book, and the clock starts ticking, and you've only got a few minutes to fish them out, you know. And they're going to be panicked and not thinking clearly. And so, I mean, it's always a big concern when you have visitors on the tug.
I can see that the safety of the thing is also on your mind as a reason to pull the boat out. The safety of people.
And some people are far more sensitive than others to mal de mer, you know. I get on the tug and it's just very gently rocking. I think, my, ain't this nice. And someone else who is more susceptible, they get on and you can see them go green right away, you know, and the tug is barely moving.
Right.
Much less if it were thrashing madly.
Right. Well, we've been really focusing on history today in other interviews as well. So I think it's really appropriate to talk to you today about this, Tom. And it sounds like they're slowly but surely plans move forward. And I know that I've learned in the last few years that there's no plan that doesn't include some investment. You know, if this tug sinks, that's suddenly a big liability. As soon as a boat ceases to be useful, it becomes a liability. And in that way,
sure.
So sounds to me like you have a good thing going, and we'll just have to keep you posted, or you'll have to keep the radio posted on what happens next, and we can hopefully continue to follow this story to a good end.
Oh, sure. I could almost do a tugboat story on a weekly basis. Almost.
I bet you could.
do you have a minute for a brief story about when the tug was first being delivered to Two Harbors from the shipyard in Cleveland?
Yes, we do.
It's an all-steel construction. All steel. That's a key term. Boats at that time were a combination of either wood and steel or all wood, and compasses act differently in an all-steel boat. And there is a compensation device on the compasses for correcting for the hull's own metal. Well, they didn't bother correcting the compass when they sailed away. They thought, well, this is just a short ride from Cleveland to the Detroit River, and then it's all easy-peasy until we get onto Lake Superior. So they did not compensate the compass when they left the shipyard. And so their basic goal was a compass course from Cleveland in a more or less northwesterly direction to a particular landmark on the northwestern part of Lake Erie that would then lead them to the Detroit River. Well, they're sailing for several hours, and their landmark is not in sight. And they're following their compass course on an uncompensated compass. They ended up sailing in a semicircle. And they're approaching Sandusky, which is on the southwestern portion of Lake Erie. And so they had to just follow the shoreline from around the western end of Lake Erie until they come sailing northwards into the Detroit River. They were in a place where they were lined up basically due north and south because of the river. So they compensated their compass then, and the rest was history.
Oh.
And in later years, when the tug was in use, they would check the compass compensation regularly. They would line it up with waterfront drive, which is aligned north and south. And so when the tug was lined up with waterfront drive, then they would compensate their compass so that it would read magnetic north. And so there's a lot more to waterfront drive than waterfront drive. It was also their reference point for checking their compass.
That's fascinating. And I happen to know that entrance to the Detroit River and the whole western section of Lake Erie is fraught with shallows.
Sure. It's a sandy bottom there that changes all the time.
Right.
And it was Paley Point and then Paley Island. And there was a lighthouse there at the time. It was called the Dummy. And about 3 years after the Edna G sailed through there, that lighthouse burned down. And they had to resort to other means for marking that channel entry there.
Interesting.
So they missed channel entry and had to sail around following the shore on the shallow bottom of the shore there. So that was kind of spooky.
Uh-huh. The beginning of a long adventure for the Edna G. Well, thank you so much, Tom. It's been wonderful to chat, and we will keep hearing about the Edna G, I am sure. You take care.
I shall. Everything's cookly cool.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Tom Kohler, one of the members of the Friends of the Edna G, giving us a little history and more. He always goes the extra mile, doesn't he?